This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back, Tom Hartman here with you. Justin Rosario writes for the Daily Banter. And in fact, when we were doing the TV show out of D.C., the founder of the Daily Banter was on our program regularly. I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. So are you, Sean. Anyway, he's a good guy. And but there's this piece over at the Daily Banter, and I'm wondering your thoughts on how this might work. There is, Ben Cohen. Ben Cohen was the founder of Daily Banter. And, I mean, up to this point, when liberals or Democrats go on the air and say that the people who follow Trump are deplorables, that, as Hillary Clinton famously did, even though it was in a private setting, it, you know, leaked and they turned it into an ad campaign, essentially. That seems to be something that, you know, really POs the Trump voters and, in theory, makes them stronger because we've called them out. Now they're furious. I'm not sure that's true. I think these guys, these men and women, are actually giant snowflakes. I think that it offends them and it makes them angry, but I think that it actually empowers our side and that we should do more of it. And this piece has been trending over at Democratic Underground for a couple of days now, and I thought, okay, this is, you know, and so I'd like to get your take on this. Now, I realize every single one of our lines right now, if somebody's on hold, waiting to come on and you know, comment on the news of the day or whatever it may be. So if you're trying to call in about this particular topic right this second, you won't be able to. But as we go through the callers, which I'm going to do in just a minute, lines will open up. And perhaps some of the people on hold would like to comment on this when I put them on the air. But here's what Justin Rosario wrote for the Daily Banter. And he's talking to, there's a picture of a white guy at a Trump rally with a T-shirt that says Trump 2016, and it has the F word. It says F your feelings, right? And in other words, he's a Trump supporter saying to the world, I don't care what you think. So this is what Justin wrote. I'm going to clean up some of the language in here, but you know, it's he says, you're trash. You've always been trash. When liberals were polite, you were trash. When liberals got a little rude, you were still trash. Now that we're tired of your crap and treating you like the trash you are, you're mortally offended and blaming us for being trash? Get the F out of here. You laugh at sexual assault victims. You cheer Latino children being tortured. You get off on police murdering unarmed black men. You mock the disabled. You send death threats to high school students opposed to guns. You call for the murder of homosexuals. You are trash. I know it's hard to look in the mirror and realize that you're the worst that humanity has to offer, but you made that choice. No one forced you to be a garbage person. You did that. You can stop anytime you want to, too, but you won't. Because deep down inside, you like being trash. So own it. That's why you love Trump so much. He told you being trash is okay. And you thought you could come out of the shadows and walk tall as a garbage person. Should we start talking like that? I'm inclined to say yes. Terry in Palm Coast, Florida. Hey, Terry, what's on your mind today?
Well, yes. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. What do you think about calling Trump supporters trash? Although that's not what you called about, I know. But I'm curious.
No, it's not at all. I wanted to thank you for all the inspiration that you've given me, and actually it inspired me to have my own Facebook page that reposts a lot of your posts and some comments of my own.
Oh, great.
Anyway,
thank you, Terry.
I am wondering, what would be a feasible, workable plan to get the Koch brothers and all the other big money out of our government? If the Democrats took the entire government, could they do that, or is there some other way?
No, there is a way to do it. You know, number one, I like what the last caller said to Congressman Pocan and what Congressman Pocan said back to him, which is that here in Oregon, when Jeff Merkley was being attacked by the Koch brothers front groups, he ran ads with, you know, just calling them out. He made the Koch brothers a campaign issue. I think that the Democrats should absolutely be doing this nationwide right now in every single race, and I don't know why they're afraid to do it. They need to get out there, and they need to turn the Koch, make the Koch brothers radioactive, and not just the Koch brothers, Adelson and the whole, you know, the whole crowd. Number one. But number two, how do we get money out of politics? Money was inserted into politics in 1976 in a big way. Remember back in 1907, during the Teddy Roosevelt administration, they passed the Tillman Act, which said that it's a felony for a corporation to give money to any candidate for federal office. Fast forward to 1976, that gets struck down by a decision called Buckley versus Vallejo, and then another one 2 years later, First National Bank versus Bilotti, that was actually authored by Lewis Powell, that decision. And in both cases, the first, Buckley having to do with billionaires, First National Bank having to do with corporations, in both cases, what the Supreme Court ruled was that money is protected by the First Amendment as if it were free speech, because corporations don't have a mouth, and because billionaires are just individual people, and they can't talk so loud that millions of people can hear them, so their money can work as their speech. I take that as a total nonsense, a total BS argument, but it is the law of the land now because the Supreme Court said so. So what we need to do is change the composition of the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court had not handed the presidency to George W. Bush in 2000, we would right now have a 7-2 liberal advantage on the Supreme Court. Instead, we've got a 5-4 conservative advantage. So what we need to do, if we get control, and this is your scenario, Terry, and by the way, thank you for calling, what we need to do is pass, a simple majority of Congress can pass legislation that changes the number of members of the Supreme Court. So once we've got the White House, the Senate, and the House, and I realize it's going to be a while, it might be 2020, it might be another 2 years, might be even 6 years, who knows. But when we've got those three things, pass that law, take the Supreme Court from 9 to 11 or 9 to 13, have that Democratic president put two or four new justices on the court, and have, in the meantime, start ginning up a case that, like the Buckley case, that the Supreme Court can use to reverse Buckley and reverse Citizens United and reverse First National Bank versus Bilotti and reverse McCutcheon and just reverse the whole damn thing. And that will get us back to the way we were from 1789, when the Constitution was ratified, until 1976, when five justices on the Supreme Court blew everything up and turned us from a democracy into an oligarchy. Roy, in Greensboro, North Carolina. Hey, Roy, what's on your mind?
Tom, a JFK hero.
Thank you. What's up?
Vis-a-vis the climate crisis. Oh, by the way, the Justin Rosario remarks are right on. They are. It's white trash. They should own it. They're a bunch of crybabies, though. But I'm really concerned about this climate crisis, and I don't think the Western wildfires are being recognized as a huge factor in this year's weather disruptions. Here, Piedmont, North Carolina, every day, 10 to 15 degrees above average. The misery heat index, even higher. It's like 100 degrees every day into October.
Well, this is why Hurricane Michael went so far so fast, is because the Gulf waters are averaging 83 degrees right now, Fahrenheit. And typically in October, October 15th, this time of year, they're 71 to 73 degrees. So they're 10 degrees warmer than normal. That's what jacked Hurricane Michael. It shouldn't have surprised anybody. Forgive my interruption, Roy. Keep on going.
No, quite. That's right on mark. Chesapeake Bay, I went there this summer in August. They're losing a lot of their salinity. The crabs and oysters are somewhat disappearing because of all the rain we've had and the rain y'all haven't had out west there.
Right.
And I think it's because of these fires. They're putting heat, particulates, carbon into the atmosphere. And I have an idea to fight it. I would really be interested in your opinion. You know our gargantuan military?
Right.
Last year, all the funding went to fighting the wildfires, and there was no prevention this past winter. Trump should have seen that. Congress should have seen that. I say we just rotating our gargantuan military, one company or in spots at a time for prevention this year, clearing the dead underbrush, maybe clearing the dead trees, planting new trees that are more suitable or something. you know, something really happened.
Well, Franklin Roosevelt confronted the same problem, Roy. We had the Dust Bowl that was going on, and literally the topsoil of the Midwest was being blown into the East Coast and out to the Atlantic. And what he did is he created this thing called the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC, and he hired literally a couple million American out-of-work men and built camps all over the country for them to work from and live in. And they planted millions of trees a month. And as they reforested, and a lot of it was just along, you know, roadsides, hedgerows, things like that, property borders. But what it did was it broke up the winds and stabilized the soil and helped capture moisture in a way that stopped the Dust Bowl. FDR ended the Dust Bowl. And this is one of the stories of the FDR administration that almost nobody knows. FDR ended the Dust Bowl with the CCC, with a giant government program that was really just designed to put people back to work, but it ended the Dust Bowl. So yeah, it could be done. And it doesn't need to be the military. It could be done the same way that Roosevelt did it. That said, though, one of the big, and I'm glad you said replacing the trees with species that are more appropriate, because one of the big problems that they have in California and pretty much everywhere else right now is that trees can't move. But the climate is moving, you know, the heat is moving north. And if the trees could move, they'd be moving at a rate of 2 to 5 miles per year going north. And they're not. They're not able to. And so what's happening is these trees that are not designed for these kind of drought conditions are being weakened and they're being attacked by insects and, you know, all kinds of awful stuff is happening to them. And thus, we, you know, you have the problems that we have. So, yeah, whether it's the Pentagon doing it or whether we create a new CCC, great idea, Roy. Very good idea. And I'm not so concerned that the burning of the forests in California is actually adding huge amounts of carbon to the atmosphere compared to everything else we're doing. And, you know, the soot is an issue, but we should be doing something for California and the rest of the country, frankly.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after this. Welcome back. Albert in Marina Del Rey. Hey, Albert, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to give some, not so much a lecture, but I want to talk about the cost involved with Medicare. You've done a good job of explaining how commons or what they are, but here's some numbers to explain what that is. So like sneakers, you may have a $30 pair of sneakers, right? The demand for that is going to be higher than the demand for a $300 pair of sneakers. And you do a good job of explaining, you know, why we need Medicare, but the cost side. So Walmart doesn't make anything, but they always have the lowest prices. And that is because they have buying power. And that's what the federal government would have if we have Medicare. So that same TV in Walmart, you know, is the same TV that was in Radio Shack that went out of business. The only difference is one had lower prices, and that's exactly what Medicare is trying to accomplish. And we need to talk more about market forces and not about accounting or finance, because when you have a heart attack, you don't care about balancing the budget because you need the care.
Right. Yeah, excellent point, Albert. And the health insurance companies right now operate, they used to operate with a 30 to 35 to, in some cases, even 40% overhead. You know, and a good chunk of that was profits, you know, money, dividends being distributed to shareholders, multi-million in the case of some of the companies like United Healthcare, multi-dozens of millions or even hundreds of millions of dollars compensation for the senior executives. Medicare, on the other hand, runs on a 2 to 3% overhead. The total cost of administration of Medicare is 2 or 3% of all the money that it's handling. And if everybody was on Medicare, that would actually probably go down a little bit. Not a whole lot, because you'd have to expand the bureaucracy. And your point is absolutely the issue, that if all of us get together and we have this collective buying power, and which is why Medicare itself right now is more efficient than a lot of insurance policies. Although the insurance companies are doing the same thing. They're going into hospitals and saying, okay, we want a bulk rate on, you know, A, B, or C. But this is an issue that I think is a really important one, and educating people about it. You know, Congressman Pocan kept pointing out that Medicare has a 70%, Medicare for all, a 70% approval rate, 52% among Republicans, which means it's over 70% among Democrats. And yet, we still get people calling up saying, how are you going to pay for it? And the fact of the matter is we're already paying for it. In fact, we're paying more than what it would cost. And it's just a matter of reallocating where those dollars are coming from and where they're going to. Am I making sense, Albert?
That's absolutely right, Tom. And you have to say to people, we don't pay for things now. So the question shouldn't be how do we pay for things in the future.
Yeah. Well, and if we took that, you know, right now about 20% of Americans, I think it's 17%, have no health insurance. And if we took 20% of the overhead away by getting rid of the for-profit insurance companies, or at least getting them out of the equation, let them just sell policies to rich people like they do in Europe. If we took them out of the equation, we capture 20% of our revenues, and that allows us to pay for the health insurance, you know, for that uninsured 17%. So we get to cover everybody for the exact same amount of money that we're paying right now for 83% of us. So spot on, Albert. Thank you very much. It's 22 minutes past the hour. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more of your calls here, in just a moment, here with more of your calls here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Emily in Chicago, you wanted to comment on my comment on the op-ed from the Daily Banner? Emily?
Yes, hello, Tom.
Hey, you're on the air. Emily, can you
hear
me?
Tom.
Yeah, you're on the air, Emily. Don't listen to your radio or your TV or whatever it is. Just talk to me on the phone, please.
Hello, Tom. Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me, Emily?
Yes, I can hear you. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually former military, and I just wanted to send a shout out to everyone who has, you know, taken the oath to protect and defend the Constitution. That you know, it's very clear that there's something very, very wrong going on, both with the Republican Party and certainly with President Trump. And essentially, military people are aiding and abetting foreign enemies of state by just willfully ignoring what is just blatantly obvious. And it just makes me very, very angry that so many people in my community can just disregard what they are supposed to be doing. That's all I have to say. I can take your
Thank you. Emily, when Donald Trump loves to position himself in front of a bunch of people in uniform, is there a sense among the military community, the veteran community, that Trump is hustling people, that he's using them as props? Or when he lavishes praise on our great patriots, you know, he uses the language, obviously, you know, but, you know, Corporal Bone Spurs here, the guy who got 5 deferments back in the 60s. I'm not buying that. Do you think that the people in the military, the veterans, are actually buying this?
Honestly, I was enlisted, and I did not.
You did not what?
On in the room. I did not know about what was going on in the real world during the time when I was enlisted.
Right.
And it was only after I started utilizing my post 9/11 GI Bill and going to very fine institutions of higher learning that I started to put the pieces together of what I saw in Iraq in terms of just military industrial complex and so on, and the movers and shakers globally in terms of oil, and then, you know, a background in history. I didn't start to put that together, and so I don't think that my fellow service members really are getting information, the correct information, either from their chain of command or from local media. Maybe it's Sinclair Media. Maybe they're willfully, you know, not looking for the information.
Well, no, American Forces Radio carries a bunch of right-wing talk. I mean, they carry
know
my
that.
Program.
I've been out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been out for some time, so I'm not really sure what's trickling down to them in terms of the chain of command, but I cannot understand why they can't put two and two together that we're under attack domestically.
Yeah, we definitely are. Thank you, Emily. Thank you so much. And thank you for serving your country in the military. It's a noble thing. Emily, I appreciate the call. And we will be back. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Seth Abramson, by the way, tweeting, and Jared Kushner could have warned the Saudi, Mr. Khashoggi, who got murdered, based on his conversation he had with the Crown Prince the day before the killing.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Really? Jared Kushner had a conversation with the Crown Prince the day before the Crown Prince had Khashoggi murdered? Seriously? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Nancy in Big Rapids, Michigan, you want to disagree with me about calling Trumpistas garbage?
I do.
Go for it.
I do. I've listened to you a lot, and I agree with almost everything you say. But this one, to call a person trash or garbage, first of all, we need to stop calling each other names in this country because there's already too much hate and anger. But this one strikes me personally because the company that picks up my trash or garbage, whichever we call it every week, belongs to a young man who was one of the finest youngster I ever taught in school. And his father died and left him this business, and he picked it up, and he's proud of it.
Well, he's not calling people garbage collectors. He's calling them garbage.
Yeah, I know that, but we shouldn't call people trash or garbage. We can say he's wrong. I think he's definitely wrong. He's definitely an unpleasant person, but I don't know. It just bothers me to have him called trash or garbage.
Yeah. It has always bothered me, too, and this is the first time, I think, in 15 years that I've talked like that on the air. But I'm reaching this point where, I mean, and maybe I shouldn't. Yeah,
well,
Nancy.
Think we all are.
Yeah, okay, Nancy.
We all are, and we have to.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to thank you, so finish your thought.
Just that we all feel that way at this point. Very frustrated, very, you know, it's tough, but we've got to tough our way through it and stay strong because we got to win our way out of this.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. Nancy, thank you for your vote on the issue. I appreciate it. And Lisa in Seattle. Hey, Lisa, what's up?
Well, hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. I hope you are, too.
Great. I am. Thank you. And I just heard Nancy, and I, to some degree, understand that, you know, when you take the higher road is usually when you have a mutual respect with somebody. And there's an old saying, you don't make nice with cancer. And unfortunately, a lot of people in our government, the Republican Party, and the Trump people, they don't respect anything but toughness for some reason. And yeah, we keep taking the higher road, and it's really not serving us, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, somebody just yesterday came out and changed, and it was a high-profile politician. I'm sorry, I don't remember who it was. Maybe you do, Lisa, or Sean, or Nate, one of you guys. Said, you know, Michelle Obama's thing, when they go low, we go high. And this person said, no, when they go low, we kick them. And, I'm sorry, I can't recall who it was, but what do you think of that, Lisa?
Well, like I said, I feel that in a lot of matters, when there's a mutual respect and you're just having a simple disagreement, I do think it's important to, you know, keep some class. But I'm like you, Tom, I'm way beyond that now.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I'm constantly being attacked. My psyche is being attacked. My hope for my future is being attacked. It's a little disingenuous to ask me to keep taking the high ground.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, there's an old saying in a spiritual thing that I belong to. It says it's a thousand times harder to live according to the law of love than to live according to the law of hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I do pledge myself to live that way. But
yeah,
sometimes you've got to fight back. No.
Yeah. Sean just told me the person who said when they go low, we kick them is Eric Holder, the former attorney general who may be running for president in 2 years. So he came out with that yesterday.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, former prosecutor. He, I guess that's what you do. Lisa, thank you. Thank you for everything that you just shared with us. It's great. Victoria in Chico, California. Hey, Victoria, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching us on Facebook Live. What's up?
Hi, Tom. This is actually my first time tuning into you. One of my friends was kind enough to share your feed.
Cool.
So I was hoping to comment on a conversation you had began earlier regarding money and politics.
Mm-hmm.
I am a intern with the organization Move to Amend.
Oh, God bless you. I have supported Move to Amend for years.
I know. So I really, really appreciate that. And I just wanted to be able to give a quick little explanation of what that is, just in relation to the concept of money in politics.
Mm-hmm.
So for any of your viewers who are interested in this group, Move to Amend, it's a nonpartisan coalition. We've got over 450,000 individuals, hundreds of organizations leading the charge to amend the U.S. Constitution. It'll be abolishing corporate constitutional rights and therefore getting big money out of politics, because that's kind of the step back from why is there money in politics, right? It's because the definitions that we currently accept in our Constitution are being applied to corporations and people alike, right? And that's where we're being left out, where the billionaire can use their money to defeat our speech.
Yep.
Practically. Their money is more influential than public opinion polling. Their money is more influential than what our individual voices say. Thankfully, their money is not more influential than our votes. So get out there and vote next month, November 6th. I just wanted to make sure that people knew there is a huge collective organization working really hard to amend the Constitution. I think your approach to restructure the Supreme Court so that we could start eroding those precedents from that process is a great idea as well. But I think that the Move to Amend strategic plan to amend the Constitution would actually rewrite the constitutional applications, therefore those precedents will be null and void at that point. So
yeah, it would be much more solid. It would be much more solid. I mean,
I think that
put this into the Constitution,
setting the stage going forward. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's how we ended up, as you described with the timeline of how money and politics has really become such a corrupting influence. Making much more clear sense of what those initial constitutional rights are, I think, is a really important way to go forward in making sure that these corrupting influences and making sure that the elite don't continue to circumvent ways to keep themselves in power and keep us grasping for straws.
Yeah, amen. And let's remind everybody, the Gillens and Page study done at Northwestern University that was published about 3 years ago, where they looked at public opinion polling on issue by issue by issue, and then they looked at actual legislation. And what they found was what the top 5% of America wants could, on a virtually daily basis, translated into legislation on a regular basis. I forget the percentage, just 60, 70% of the time, what the top 5% and maybe the top 10% wants gets turned into legislation. What the bottom 90 or 95% of Americans want, the probability of those desires being, regardless of where, like Medicare for All is 70% approval rating right across the United States right now. Regardless of how high the percentage was, the probability of what the bottom 90% of Americans want being translated into legislation is statistically equivalent to random noise. In other words, there is no correlation. There's been a complete disconnect between what the average person wants and what gets made into law versus what rich people want and what gets made into law. And you're absolutely right. Amending the Constitution is the most solid, most meaningful, most long-term, most lasting way to do it, and Move to Amend is the best organization to support in that. Victoria, thank you for the call. It's great to hear from you, and thanks for watching us on Facebook Live. Johnny in Lamarck's, Texas. Hey, Johnny, what's up?
I agree with you, and Move to Amend is on my list of organizations I donate to.
Oh, good on you, Johnny. So what's
along
up?
Along with Free Speech TV, Pacifica Radio, and a whole bunch of candidates right now. Listen, last hour, you made a great suggestion, which I love. You suggested, I think it was iHeart Network, the media megalith that has over 900 broadcast stations. You suggested that some kind-hearted, wealthy guy who's sympathetic towards the liberal cause buy up that network.
Yeah, they were for sale
about an experiment in China a number of years ago. It's an environmental remediation experiment in which they successfully converted desert lands back into forest with its actual running streams and such. And they did that by planting various species of trees and certain plants, and they irrigated those plants for a certain number of years. And within a decade or two, the desert had converted completely back to forest.
Mm-hmm.
And that got me to thinking, likewise, because there's so much wisdom to be gained in actually taking our language and looking at our world and applying language in the same way. So, in other words, if we're experiencing a desertification, of our political landscape as a result of the slash and burn, the divide and conquer strategy of neocons starting back in the mid-1970s, when you take away that source of misinformation and infection and you replace it with actual journalism, the political landscape eventually can grow green again.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Johnny. And this is and the flip side of that is also true, which is that back in the 70s, in 1971, when Lewis Powell said to business, you've got to get control of the media, you got to get control of the universities, you got to get control of the think tanks, you got to get control of the Supreme Court and the entire judiciary, the federal judiciary, and then you need to start getting control of state houses. When he laid that out, the billionaires stepped up and said, we're going to do it. And they now have control of the media. And they have, their own television network, Fox News, owned by a billionaire, always presenting the billionaire's perspective, although they always present it as the little guy's perspective. But, you know, anybody who spends 5 minutes on Fox News, you know, with half a brain knows that's BS. But yeah, well said, Johnny. Yeah. Yeah.
The last thing, I think Nancy or Lisa would not disapprove of the word deplorable instead of trash.
Yeah, you're probably right, although she's not in the line to tell us.
But, yeah. She got that one right.
Okay. Yeah, thanks a lot, Johnny. Good to hear from you. We'll be back. We're going to check in with Luke Vargas in 4 minutes here with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. And I'll be picking up a few phone calls between now and then, but the end of the show is going to be the news, so stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archive.
It's 45 minutes past the hour. And welcome back. Brenda in Newport News, Virginia. Hey, Brenda, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Good to talk to you. I wanted to discuss the article that you were reading from the Daily Banter.
Mm-hmm.
I agree 100%. I'm tired of being nice. I am a sexual assault survivor myself. And in my opinion, they have really crossed the line at this point, and I'm done being nice. I went on the Daily Banter, and I commented that it's so good I'm printing, framing, and hanging it on my wall, and the next relative or friend that dares to talk to me about Trump in my house will be forced to read it.
Ha! Okay, Brenda, thank you for that. And that's solid. That is solid. Charlie in Redwood Valley, California. Hey, Charlie, you think that we shouldn't call people names?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, this is a big deal for me. I have felt all along that the Republicans have merely tried to make their point by calling people names. And I think what we ought to do is say name calling is not going to work. We're going to deal with facts. And every time they call people names, say, you're name calling. Let's hear some facts. And so, because we teach our children not to name call.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's lying, you tell them you're not telling the truth, but you don't call them a liar.
Yeah.
So I feel very strongly about it. And I was so frustrated with the candidates, especially Hillary, not pointing out that most of what Trump was doing was just calling names.
Right. But it worked.
Not providing any real facts.
It worked. I mean, he knocked out 17 Republican rivals and ended up in the White House.
Oh, yeah. But nobody wants to hear a couple people saying, oh, you're a jerk. Oh, yeah. Well, you're a dork. Oh, yeah. They're going to turn it right off.
Right.
I think if people say, there you go, like Reagan, his famous line, there you go again.
Yeah, that is a way to do it. That is a way to do it. Charlie, I want to get one more caller in here real quick before the news. Thank you. Thanks, Charlie. Great to hear from you. Al in Buffalo, New York. Al, we got about a minute and a half. What's up?
Yeah, I always hammer my Republican friends. I always say, look, you're the party that blew the banks, right? You're the party that put two wars on a credit card. You're the same party that threatened the full faith and credit of the United States. The same party that failed to protect us from the worst attack on American soil. And let's see, what has this administration passed? Not one significant piece of legislation thus far, Tom. This is, other than huge tax cuts for the super wealthy, this is what we need to keep telling these people. Your party blew the banks, not us. Your party keeps spending money like drunken sailors. You know, I think we
not
just
us,
have to keep, we don't need to call them names. It was the Republican Party that you know, basically created the subprime mortgage scandal.
Right, and it was the Republican Party that lied us into a couple of wars that have cost us trillions of dollars, too. And not to mention, you know, lots of blood. Human blood all over the world. I think 3,000 or 4,000 Americans now dead in Iraq and Afghanistan.
All right, thanks, Tom.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Al. You know, Al's point is really, really a good one. And it really is. I mean, ever since 1980, when the two Santa Claus theory was put into application by the Republicans, ever since then, what we have seen over and over and over throughout these election cycles is the Republicans running up the debt as hard and as fast as they can, and then as soon as a Democrat comes into office, screaming and yelling about how they've got to do something about the debt, and please cut welfare, please cut Social Security, please cut long-term unemployment. And, you know, tragically, you know, more than one Democrat has gone along with that. So, you know, we'll see where it goes this time. Luke Vargas with Talk Media News is up next. Stick around. Let's check in with Talk Media News, find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Loving What You Do, Ellen Ratner's new book. Luke Vargas is on the line with us, the chief foreign correspondent for Talk Media News, live from the United Nations. You can follow Luke at The Courier on Twitter. Luke, the death penalty, we're getting some good news here?
We are, both from within the United States and outside of our borders. Outside of our borders, the decision impacting many more people is that Malaysia, their new old leader, who's, I believe, in his early 90s, says, look, we are going to set in motion beginning on Monday legislation to outlaw the death penalty. And for now, there's an immediate halt to 1,200 planned executions. Malaysia, a country that uses hanging as a punishment for a whole range of crimes, including things like drug trafficking, which I think we could agree does not rise to the severity of execution, let alone any crime, perhaps. Amnesty International praising this, calling this an astounding turnaround for a country that had really clung to this policy. I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that Malaysia has been trying to free a number of its citizens who are on death row in other countries, and they found, unsurprisingly, you have little standing to make that case when you kill people in your own criminal justice system. This is, I think, a great development. And then Washington State has now become the 20th state in the United States, plus the district and Puerto Rico, to also ban the death penalty. The Supreme Court in Washington today saying this was an arbitrary type of policy. It was not applied with any consistency and was often racially motivated. And I have to say, it's part of, I think, momentum behind this. Unfortunately, it's limited, it seems, to blue states. You know, since 2007, we've seen New Jersey, New York, New Mexico, Illinois, Connecticut, Maryland, Delaware, and now Washington all ban the death penalty. What do those states have in common? So this is a trend. I just would hope it leaves blue states at some point and people's their conscience is peaked here. But again, a great day of progress, one day on the heels of the UN's day against the death penalty. You see a major state and a major country reversing course here. I think it's a great development.
Remarkable. The Orthodox Church, is this the Russian Orthodox Church, the Greek Orthodox Church? There's the Coptics, the Egyptian Orthodox Church, has granted autocephaly to Ukraine's church, which sounds like a genetic brain disorder.
It does. Yes, exactly. Well, this is a big development for Russia and for Ukraine. This is the Orthodox Church based in Constantinople, their patriarch ruling today after years of appeal from Ukraine. Now, just worth pointing out, Ukraine, one of the largest Orthodox populations in the world, their church has been under the control of the Moscow-based Russian Orthodox Church. So you see the patriarchs of Moscow appointing the leaders to the church in Ukraine, and for centuries calling the churches in Ukraine that don't want to be under Moscow's influence schismatic, right? They're not, you know, part of the faith, and their, you know, parishioners are not part of the communion. This has now been reversed. This is a lot of it has to do, according to the interviews I've done, with the fact that Russia had been using its Orthodox Church to exert types of influence on Ukraine. It was sort of a political force in many ways. In the Church of Constantinople here, knowing full well that they will lose the backing of the Russian Orthodox Church, their, you know, patriarch has been already warned. If you do this, if you grant, you know, if you turn the Church of Ukraine into its own entity, Russia's Orthodox Church will stop following the Orthodox Church based in Turkey. They went ahead and did it anyways. A lot of this has to do with the fact that now when you take out the Ukrainian churches, the Ukrainian priests who are part of the Orthodox faith, you take them out of the Russian Church, the Russian Church becomes much smaller. And so it's
interesting.
Sort of a contest for power. Power, it reminds me of a history textbook. It seems like an issue that we wouldn't be dealing with in 2018. But there's a lot of sort of Ukraine-Russia politics at play here, and it seems Ukraine has come out in the winter.
Yeah, fascinating. And then this Chinese spy and all the corporate espionage against the United States. What's going on with this?
Yeah, his name's Yu Yanjin. He was arrested in Belgium earlier this year and extradited to the United States on Tuesday, accused of economic espionage, attempting to steal trade secrets from General Electric Aviation and another firm, which likely is Boeing. This is what experts are calling sort of an increasingly common Chinese strategy, as U.S. and international firms realize they need to be very careful with their own data privacy when their executives go to China. They're wary about doing various sorts of information, sharing with the Chinese. And so you're seeing an increasing pattern where there are intrusion efforts, in American biotech, defense, pharmaceuticals, transportation. You see sort of Chinese intelligence assets trying to infiltrate those companies, recruit people from those companies to come to China for meetings and then take some of their data there. And it really cuts against the whole sort of professed China, made in China trade strategy, right? They're trying to say, hey, we don't want to be relying on the U.S. and other countries for some of our key industries.
Right.
Well, it seems like one way to do that is to sort of tap into the American brain power a little bit. At least that's the accusation. Let's see. I mean, I think we're going to hear a lot more of this between now and the midterms. I don't think it's coincidental. This administration has been talking a lot in recent weeks about Chinese attempts to sway the election. This guy had been detained in Belgium since March. I wonder if there's some, timing here to have another bad news story about China just a few weeks ahead of the midterm.
Oh, that's interesting. So you think Trump might have pulled this out of the hat for political purposes?
I'm not accusing him, but I would keep your eyes on the headlines. See how much more anti-China stories we get the next few weeks.
There you go. Luke Vargas, you can follow him on Twitter as The Courier. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you, Tom.
And thank you for being with us today. It's been a fascinating day, as it seems like every single day in Trump world here is has its ups and downs, shall we say. But anyhow, we soldier on, right? We continue. This is the place where despair is not an option. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.